This episode is sponsored by Natural Mat, an organic bed and mattress company based on the banks of the River Exe in Devon. Natural Mat controls the whole process of making, from collecting organic wool to sending out the finished product in its own vans. You can visit a Natural Mat showroom in the Cotswolds, Chiswick or Devon, or log on to naturalmat.co.uk.
Well, what better use for a state dining room than a fancy castle? And in fact, we you know, because the weather's so terrible in England most of the time, it's a wonderful way for children to let off steam when she has friends over. And the state dining room was actually, it's a beautiful room. It's an exact copy of the ballroom at Buckingham Palace. We don't have many balls these days, so we might as well use it for fun. And yeah, we have this very big bouncy castle. I mean, it is a real one. It's a castle.
Hello, I'm Carol Annett from Country and Townhouse magazine. Welcome to the House Guest podcast, where I chat with experts from the world of interior design and decoration, the people behind the houses and hotels you see in glossy magazines like ours. Some of the names will be familiar and others maybe less so, but I'm sure you'll recognise the hotels and restaurants they've designed. And if you're in the middle of your own building project or restyle, maybe you'll pick up some tips for yourself. If you listen on the Entel app, there's more information and images on the projects and places mentioned. For this episode of House Guest, we're honoured to be joined by Lord Spencer, the 9th Earl Spencer, whose seat, Althorp in Northampton, has been in the family for 500 years. Welcome, Lord Spencer.
Thank you.
You have said, "Sometimes I forget what a magnificent historic place Althorp is, because for me it is simply home." So tell us about your home, albeit with 30 bedrooms and 500 acres.
Well, you know, home is quite an all-encompassing word, really, because I see it as a headquarters, really. It's my family's HQ. You've mentioned the 500 years of history there, and I realised as soon as I took over 27 years ago, that it was really my job just to keep it going. So it's unlike a lot of people's homes in that most people go and collapse and relax at their homes and settle down with their family. Whereas for me, Althorp is an ongoing project. And I'm just the latest link in quite a long chain. I think I'm the 18th generation of my family to live there. And in fact, one of the other things I've got is portraits of all of these people hanging, judging me on the walls. When I walk through these rooms, I see them looking down at me, and I sometimes think they're thinking, "Is he doing a good job or not?" So it's not a conventional home. It's not a home I live in every day. But it's something that I am passionately attached to, because apart from anything else, I love the history. Not just the fact that it's family history; it's part of Britain's history. It's a part of the world's culture.
And am I right in thinking that you used to be a tour guide?
I did, yes. I wanted to make pocket money when I was young. And the house has been open on a small basis, really, since the 50s. And when I was in my early teens, I think, I made £3 an afternoon taking groups round. And actually, I got to learn quite a lot. I find, you know, I've touched upon this love of history. I've always loved watching people, actually. That's the thing. And what I particularly enjoy about living in a house with all these ancient pieces of furniture, etc., in it, they're actually the portraits. And I grew to love the people in the portraits and the tales they told. It's one of the things I got to learn when I was writing the history of the house and then of my family. People tended to be painted at a particular time, the women at their most beautiful, the men at their most powerful. The men are always showing off their status in these portraits. The women are showing off their fresh prettiness or whatever. And so I've got to know really only one side of the people from being a tour guide, and then much more through reading letters and diaries. And really, I think one of the great things about the past is it's so connected to the present. And people have gone through exactly the same triumphs and disappointments in their private lives as we experience today.
And what about growing up there? I mean, were you skateboarding the corridors, or was it always kind of, you can't touch this, you can't touch that?
Well, my earliest memories of Althorp are visiting my grandparents, and I had this absolutely delightful grandmother, Cynthia Spencer, and she was just sweet and lovely and always thrilled to see us. I think my grandfather was less thrilled to see small people in the house. He guarded it rather like a sort of ancient Rottweiler, and he cared more passionately about the objects than people. and that included his grandchildren. So we were always given, when Diana and I were going across to the house from my father's house in Norfolk, we'd always be told, don't speak, don't touch, don't do anything. And it was pretty terrifying, actually. And I remember staying the night there, and it was such a creaky old house then, and you could hear the night watchman sort of, you know, wandering around the house, and you didn't know if it was him or a ghost or whatever, and then endless grandfather clocks going off at different times, and it was very, very creepy, actually. And I remember as a young boy thinking, I really don't want any part of this, when a rather sort of forlorn male cousin of mine told me with huge jealousy that I was going to inherit it. I really thought, well, you can have it. I don't want it. You know, it was an old man's house, and I never could see how I was going to make any impact on it. And so when my grandfather died when I was 11, and then we moved to the house to live, because we were basically with my father, and that's when I really got to know Althorpe. But I had a very complicated relationship with my stepmother, so I got to know the outside more than the inside, because it was more fun to be outside. So in fact, when I inherited, there were many rooms I had never even been into. Yeah, a lot of the attics, etc. I mean, I'd just, you know, explored a bit. But it was, when it landed on my lap very early, my father died very young, I didn't really know what to do. And I called in lots of expert help, old figures from interior design, etc., from London, and wandered around with them and listened to them. And I tackled some of the immediate needs. A lot of the rooms were very over-gilded. There was a lot too much going on the decoration side. And I didn't want to faithfully take it back to the past, but I did have a look at what the past had been like, you know, going back through the wallpapers and paint scrapes all the way back to see what had worked before, and then taking a view from that. So the best line I heard in interior design was that authenticity is good taste and good taste is authenticity, which sounds incredibly simple, but actually it's true. And so going back to really an 18th century English feel was what I wanted to do. Even though the house is older, it looks 18th century.
And you've talked about decorating as needing you mixing the old and new and having a backbone. There needs to be a backbone in there.
Well, my view on contemporary design is sometimes it does feel a little spineless, actually. You go into a room and it feels rather like a sort of luxury modern hotel rather than a home. And I think having a few statement pieces could be classical, could be something really conventional, but it just holds a room together. I think sometimes we can be too beige with our tastes, and it's important to realise that some of the older pieces still work.
And that brings us neatly onto the Althorpe Living History Collection. So tell us about that, the furniture.
Well, about 15 years or so ago, I was approached by some people who wanted to do a furniture line, and they'd come across Althorpe being called the one of the greatest private collections or whatever in an old magazine, Apollo magazine from the 60s. And I really didn't know anything about licensing or anything like that, but they came up with this idea. And why I really enjoyed the manufacturers, they're called Theodore Alexander, was the man in charge was so captivating and so energetic and so passionate about Althorpe. And he was coming to the end of his career, and he said he wanted to go out the sort of Rolls-Royce standard of furniture, and that Althorpe would be it. And he and his design chief, they said, could they look round the house? And I said, of course. And they reappeared 3 days later with 10,000 images of things they wanted to work with. And I think so far we've had about 650 pieces of furniture made as reproductions, handmade reproductions of the Althorpe line. And then I plough all of the proceeds that come back to me back into the fabric of the house. And I like to think of it as a holistic process, really, because for 500 years the house has looked after the furniture, and now the furniture looks after the house.
And presumably some of those designs, so sofas, for example, would have been not particularly comfortable when they had to accommodate a lady's large dress or bustle when the lady was sitting on the edge of the sofa. So what are the? Were you involved in the challenges of making it a more contemporary feel to the collection?
Well, you're right. You know, when people were designing furniture in the 18th century, they were thinking of impact. And whereas we sit in sofas for hours now, In those days, you might a lady would have perched on the edge of it before going to dance or something. So comfort was never really a thought, but now, of course, we expect comfort. So the upholstery is probably the biggest difference in terms of the sort of plumpness of it. That's the biggest change. So in terms of the design, I've always maintained a veto, but I've never had to use it. Basically because they're using the original designs and I quite like the original designs, and the modifications are entirely understandable. I haven't had a problem with any of them. In fact, I once said, this doesn't look right, and it turned out that by mistake they got the wrong piece in the wrong collection, so at least I spotted it.
And actually, am I right in thinking that your dining table and your dining chairs are, that's what people are buying? So it is actually the ones that you're using.
Yes, my favourite piece actually is this wonderful, very simple, early 17th century oak chest, which belonged to George Washington's ancestors. And then we've got a sworn affidavit on the inside from the priest from the 1700s saying it belonged to the Washington family. And I use it for my tennis gear now. I still use it. I believe in using these pieces. But it is the Washington chest, and it's done fantastically well, of course, in the United States. But the furniture's been a wonderful success story. You know, I was at a launch in January in New Delhi, and I've been all over the world supporting the line, and it's been fascinating. It's in 27 stores in China. One of the joys of this is the weird world you enter in terms of furniture. And I go to this place called High Point in North Carolina twice a year. Well, I don't go twice a year. There's a market twice a year, and I go every couple of years. And it's several million square feet of furniture there. And then you walk in, and they have reproduced Althorp in about 12 of the main rooms as you walk around. And it is quite bizarre, because it looks like, I mean, it's not entirely, the furniture's not always in the right place, and it's almost like a lunatic's got into my house and rearranged it to surprise me. But it is so lovely to see people enjoying these pieces that my family have been lucky enough to have for years.
Yeah, how wonderful. I have to say, I was flicking through the website last night, and I've got my eye on the butterfly box.
It's beautiful.
How beautiful is that?
Well, that's based on a needlepoint box from the Victorian times, and it's just so, it does really well. It's a really interesting piece and very pretty. Yeah.
So tell me about some of the rooms, the special rooms at Althorp. Mm. The one that caught my eye was the Queen Mary bedroom, mm-hmm. Because it has this incredibly tall structure of a bed. I mean, I have no idea how you dust it on the top, draped in a pea green taffeta. Mm.
It's really a very striking room. I'm glad you spotted it. The bed is by far the most imposing feature in that room. It was used by Queen Mary 106 years ago when she and George V came to visit the house in 1913. And I love the history of these rooms and the people who stayed in them and what they've left behind. Queen Mary was a very awkward house guest, in fact, and people used to dread having her to stay because she would essentially take things, and you'd be having tea with her and she would say to the hostess, "I love the silver teapot," and the hostess would say, "Well, it's been in our family for years," and she goes, "But I really love it."
Oh no.
And then you'd feel you had to give it to
her.
Of course. But we have a very rare possession at Althorp, which is a vase which she gave to us. So I don't think there's many times she actually gave gifts, but it has a picture of Spencer House, our old house in London, on it, and I think she thought it would be a suitable present.
Oh, lovely. Well, that's nice. Occasionally she gave back. It's better than a packet of Haribos.
Yes.
And what about some of the other rooms that you have particular resonance with? Do you actually live in the main house, or do you have your own private areas?
We use one wing, and then, but I you know, the original builder of the house, John Spencer, who died in 1522, he left in his will that Althorp must always be a place of entertainment. Well, that's a rather nice clause to have in a will, because I really think it's important to obey that for the good of the house as well as the fun of it. About 6 or 7 weekends a year, we fill it with family and friends, all generations, and bring it alive. And actually, it's one of the things when people come around Althorp, they say, "My goodness, it's a home." Well, it's not actually a home, a conventional home, in terms of everyday living. But what it has got is the feeling of being enjoyed. And I think it's a an understandable problem for a lot of these places. But when they get taken over by an institution, however well-meaning and worthy the institution, you snuff out a part of the soul, I think.
I love the idea of also the challenges that you face sort of taking over a house from a previous occupant. I was reading about the staircase in the saloon that had been, by a previous ancestor, had been painted white.
Yes.
And it's it's one of those things, you just walk in and you go, oh no.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting about Althorp, I've looked at all the plans, and there are about 90 rooms, actually, but only one of them has stayed the same for 500 years, which is an old picture gallery, about 120 feet long. But the generations have always found different uses for different parts of the house, and it's changed. Of course, that's no longer possible because of planning regulations, and I understand that. But it has been an evolving story for 500 years, the use of the house and the enjoyment of it. And of course, my prime role now is as really a custodian to hand it on.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was mathematical tiles. Mm-hmm. Now, I had never heard of mathematical.
No, it's quite niche.
I mean, it sounds like sort of, it's like a kind of posh cladding, really,
isn't it? It is exactly that. So what happened was the original house, which is still there underneath, is a Tudor red brick construction built in 1508. But in the late 18th century, an incredibly influential landscape designer called Capability Brown, who was involved in an enormous number of the large British English estates, he decided that it was very poor show to have a red brick house. And he said that if you have a red brick house, it puts the whole valley into a fever. And his son-in-law, it was a very fine architect called Henry Holland, and he was employed by my family to put on the posh cladding of mathematical tiles. They're about a centimetre and a half thick limestone.
It's a heck of a job.
Yes, it was a big job. And actually, I've had to redo the entire exterior of the house. I've re-roofed it. I've redone the plumbing. I've redone the heating. I've redone the security system about 3 times. So I've done rather a lot with it. But the cladding was the most complicated, because when they clad it in the 1780s, no one thought it would ever be seen again underneath. So no great care was taken. They just drilled in these tiles with long nails, and over 200 years little bits of moisture seeped in, and the whole thing started to buckle. So I had to take it all down and put it back up again, really. Huge jobs, but you know, I'm passionate about preservation and conservation and history, so it's incredibly lucky. I mean, you know, I love it. I mean, there's always something to be done, but it's an interesting challenge. Last week, I had a ceiling come down in one room. We knew it was weak, so luckily it removed everything from there while it was being inspected. But sure enough, the whole thing came down, and you just think, what's next? You know,
yeah. Terrifying. Mm. Do you love it with your... I mean, I know you have a little one now. Is she 4?
Yeah, Charlotte. Actually, I have a 6-year-old, Charlotte. And she... Yeah, she loves it.
Does she still have a bouncy castle in the state dining room?
Yes, I'm afraid so. Well, what better use for a state dining room than a bouncy castle? And in fact, we you know, because the weather's so terrible in England most of the time, it's a wonderful way for children to let off steam when she has friends over. Mm. And the state dining room was actually, it's a beautiful room. It's an exact copy of the ballroom at Buckingham Palace. We don't have many balls these days, so we might as well use it for fun. And yeah, we have this very big bouncy castle. I mean, it is a real one. It's a castle. And the children love it.
There've been all sorts of interesting, fascinating people in the house, mm-hmm. ladies in the house. Mm-hmm. And the one that really caught my eye was Esther Acklam, who married into the family in 1814.
Mm, she's so intriguing. So I had an ancestor, he was the third Earl Spencer, and I'd have to say he didn't set the world alight. He was a very solid, dutiful politician. He fought against slavery and gave the vote to the middle classes and all that sort of thing. Very interesting liberal politician, but not what we would call particularly interested in the ladies. And in the end, his family said, well, you've got to get married. And they decided that he should marry Esther Acklam. And you really can't think of a bigger contrast between this rather plodding, English country gentleman, and Esther, who was phenomenally rich and lived in a very fast set in London. She was a sort of Kim Kardashian of her days. And this forced marriage, really. He went for a long walk around the park when he was told he ought to marry her. And 3 or 4 hours later, he came back and said, yes, he would do it. And then somehow, magically, they fell madly in love and had, unfortunately, a very brief marriage because she died in childbirth, but one of real passionate love. It's a rather lovely story, you know, just the two complete opposites, finding something in each other that really chimed.
And is her, does she have a portrait in the house?
She does have a small one, but I think she was only around in the family for a couple of years before she died. And he never recovered, actually. I mean, there's no, he sort of wore mourning clothes for the rest of his life, quite a long time, 30 years, I think. And there's no hint of any other girlfriend. And rather bizarrely, he threw his sort of passion into breeding bulls, which is a sort of substitute, a very manly substitute, I think. But no, all of the ladies of the house, they're much more interesting than the men. We men tend to be sort of plodding beta types, whereas the women are alphas.
I wanted to read you this quote. Cosimo III
noted
that the interior of Althorp House was strongly influenced by Italian architecture. But he also remarked that it may be said to be the best planned and the best arranged country seat in the kingdom. For though there may be many which surpass it in size, none are superior to it in symmetrical elegance.
Mm, isn't that lovely?
It is lovely. But what I'm interested in is, if you had a blank canvas now, would you be designing in a similar vein, or would you go for something completely different?
That's such a good question. Well, I could go either way on that. So I did, actually, about 20 years ago, I looked at designing a smaller version of the house for the park. There was a brief planning opportunity where you could put something up in England in an area such as the park. And I came, it was a bit too much of a pastiche. It had a red brick element going, harking back to the original house, but it was very modern inside. I love contemporary design, and you know, I clever concrete and glass is as good as anything Palladian, in my view. So I'm very happy to go either way on that.
I feel that should be a lightning bolt striking at this moment.
I just think that, of course, there can be excruciatingly ugly modern architecture. But I think for living, if I was talking about living, I would go for something about a third of the size and try and capture the perfect lines in a modern way.
And you do allow people to rent the whole house, is that right?
We do occasionally. We've had a couple of weddings and things like that. So we do that on a very... I'm incredibly careful about how that goes, because at the end of the day, my role is very much a defensive one. It's trying to keep the place safe. And, of course, it's lovely to make some revenue to pay for some maintenance or whatever. But you don't want to be... I mean, you can destroy it. You can destroy the house. You can destroy the brand. You know, it's got to all be looked after.
And so the house is open during the summer?
We have to be open for 60 days each summer. That's part of the inheritance tax obligation, which is absolutely fine. And we do it with a huge smile. It's not a huge money spinner at all. It's an obligation which we meet with happiness. And it's incredible that the people come from all over the world, of course. These historic houses have quite a pull. And my father used to keep a map of the world. And when he met somebody, he'd put a pin in it from their place of birth. And it was incredible. It was sort of covered everywhere. But I love, you know, the people who come, 99% of them are absolutely charming and appreciative and slightly stunned that places like this still exist in private hands.
And do you still act as a tour guide?
I don't. I do it for charity quite a few times a year, for particular causes or whatever. And if we have new, fresh house guests staying, I'll do it for them. But not every day. I don't know how they do it, actually. I mean, if you're doing it several times a day, I remember when I was doing it as a child, you think, God, did I just say that an hour ago? Or did I say it a minute ago? And you go round in a loop. But no, I mean, what I do, when I give a tour of the house, I do it as a repository of human memories, it's not a history of art lecture.
Yeah. Just going back to the craftsmanship, and over the generations, Althorp has had the pick of the top mm-hmm. craftspeople over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of things which really sort of jumped out at me, which was this beautiful Waterford chandelier.
Mm. Well,
tell us about that.
My family have been very lucky in being able to get the best craftsmen involved in the furniture. We have this unbelievable suite of furniture from Spencer House in London from the 1750s. But my favourite object that my family has sort of collected, I guess, over the year, or commissioned, is a set of three Waterford crystal chandeliers from the fifth Earl Spencer was twice the Viceroy of Ireland and was based in Dublin Castle. And he brought back very few things from there, actually, but these exquisite chandeliers. I've never seen more beautiful ones. And of course, lucky they're in my family's ownership, but they are just so beautifully made. Of course, everyone has heard of Waterford crystal these days, but it was in 1860 or so, they produced some stunning pieces. And I'm afraid, rather greedily, I have pinched one for our bedroom because it's quite nice to wake up to in the morning. But the other two are on public view, so it's not entirely selfish.
And what do you hope will be your legacy for the house, other than the bouncy castle?
I hope that in future generations will think he sort of did his bit. I mean, it's more structurally sound than it's been for a couple of hundred years, probably. And but, you know, there's always worries. And I worry about the future. But if I have a legacy, I hope that I'll hand it on. It's very conventional. Aspiration, but I'll hopefully hand it on to the next generation in a better state than it came to me.
Thank you, Lord Spencer. It's been an absolute delight.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Sustainability has been at the heart of Natural Mat since day one. This year, they became the first bed and mattress company in the UK to gain B Corp status. They also hold the Queen's Award for Sustainability. Using only certified organic materials, Natural Mat's mattresses are better for you and the planet. Visit naturalmat.co.uk.
Thank you for joining me today. You can hear more House Guest on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment in the audio section, along with our sister podcast, Breakout Culture, with Lord Ed Vasey and Charlotte Metcalf. You can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett.